Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're here to talk about the issues that are important in our lives. And one day a week, I don't have guests on. I don't do the original in-depth commentaries that I try to do about 5 days a week. Instead, this is talk back. And talk back means that throughout the entire program, you can call in and ask questions, raise issues, share opinions, and give your own perspective. 888-874-4888 is the number. 888-874-4888. Also, many people are listening over the telephone. And this has really been a revolution because historically, for decades, if you wanted to listen to the program at noon that I've done, you had to be in front of a radio. And cab drivers would tune on the radio and listen when I was on BAI or WMCA or WOR or ABC. And now, because of the internet, we're the number one radio program, radio station in the world for progressive minds. But now you don't have to be near a computer to listen over the internet or a radio. You can listen over your phone. So I have people from all walks of life who say, listen to you. And when I'm on the road, I just go to the archives and download the programs I've missed because I do 15 hours of live broadcasting a week. That number to call if you ever want to listen over the telephone is 619-550-0869. 619-550-0869. Today, before I take your calls, I'm going to give you a real in-depth analysis of what you can do to protect yourself from cancer risks in our environment. I'll be sharing my own insights, as well as those from Steve Frankel. I'll also be sharing 10 natural substances that could help cure type 1 diabetes from GreenMedInfo, Sarah G. I'm also personally of the belief that our epidemic of stage 1 or type 1 diabetes in children is due to vaccinations. Also, black is the new green. We're going to discover the health benefits of black foods. Now, we know about green foods and red foods and yellow foods. Well, today I'll give you some of the best. Also, more women now die from one thing than from car accidents or cervical cancer, and it's completely preventable. I'll deal with that. And then from our environmental segment today, a really interesting piece about the future of peak water. Now, of course, you've heard of peak oil. That means what happens when we have reached the maximum amount of oil that is available, and then it starts declining. Well, we'll always have oil, but so many products that we use, from our sneakers to our cars to our computers to our cell phones to our appliances, are made from petrochemicals. So what happens to those? Well, they just get more expensive. But we can live without it, and we already have a lot. But you can't live without water. Lester Brown in The Observer has written a very important treatise on the real threat to our future, and it's about water now. I'll share that with you. And also a short piece today on the people who actually evaluated for the president the safety of using the pipeline that's going from Canada, the Keystone XL pipeline. Now, the president said that before he made any decision, he had to get a comprehensive independent review to see, you know, is it safe? All right, fine. But the fix is in. It's a fraud. We'll tell you who was selected to do the evaluation and what connection they have, you guessed it, to the owners of the Keystone Pipeline. So that we'll share with you, and hopefully you'll spread that information to environmental activists because they need to know that. Let's begin, and then in about 10 minutes I'll start taking your calls. When you consider how many toxins we have today, it's overwhelming. In my first major book, The Complete Handbook of Nutrition, about 20% was devoted to nutrition, but an awful lot of the book was devoted to the toxins in cosmetics. I call that chapter Pretty Poisons, from deodorants to lipsticks. And remember, a lipstick you actually eat. You know, you might apply it 2 or 3 times a day. Well, there's a lot of chemicals in there, and they're all bad. Even some toothpaste and mouthwashes. But then you get into all the other things that we're exposed to, and we don't pay a whole lot of attention to it. Because, well, unless we can see it, we don't think it's harmful if we breathe it. But it is. There are particulate matters in the air that are extremely harmful, and they accumulate in the body. Also, think of the time in the warm weather when you're having a cold beverage, even a cold iced tea, but it's not out of glass. That's safe. Or stainless steel. That's safe. Instead, it's out of plastic. And when that heats up, it's not safe. Now, you have no way of knowing at what point from its manufacture to the time you have it and are using it, was it exposed to temperature? I remember a friend of mine who was serving in the first Iraq War said that everyone was getting sick around him in his unit because they were drinking water that had been sitting out in the sun and sometimes reaching 130 degrees, the bottles did. And I said, well, that's because the chemicals in there are leaching into the water. And those you can't expel easily from your body, they accumulate. So whether it's shampoo or pesticides or just the regular water coming out of your tap or any form of plastic, have you ever noticed when you get into a new car, the smells, or you get in a new carpet, even clothing that comes in from other countries is frequently sprayed with formaldehyde. You heard me right, a form of embalming fluid, because in many of the countries, including India and Bangladesh, when they are making these fabrics, including especially cotton fabrics, or in Afghanistan or Pakistan making carpets out of natural wool, they can have insects and weevils get in there and eat them. And of course, you're not going to buy anything if there's a hole in it, and like a moth. So they spray them. Now, I know that for a fact because one of the first jobs I had when I came to New York City was at a little store, 75th and Broadway, which was a men's clothing store. And my eyes would tear up and my cheeks would get flushed and I'd have a hard time breathing. And I only worked there for 2 weeks because I told the fella, there's something really bad. He said, well, you'll get used to it. You'll get used to it. It's just the chemicals they treat all the clothes with to preserve them. Now, at the time, I didn't appreciate how dangerous that is. It's extremely dangerous. Well, think of the people working in that field. Now, how many people who work with plastics or work with particle board that most people have their furniture made from? Even expensive furniture, like a mahogany desk, frequently is just laminated mahogany. So the top is mahogany laminate. The rest of it is frequently just particle board or press wood and is preserved. Even the preservatives on people's backyard decks, in order for them not to rot, they frequently use a preservative. It's pressure-treated lumber. Well, that outgasses over years. Yet we never think about that. Walk around barefoot, take it inside. So when we become sensitive to how toxic our environment can be, that's one of the reasons that I think that people should be looking to detoxify their home and work environment. And it's not difficult. You know, you can get a HEPA air filter. You can put living plants around your office. That helps clean up the air. You can use a quality water filter. That will help clean up the drinking water. You can start buying. Your cooking utensils should never be aluminum. Your pots and pans should always be stainless steel. And be careful about that, because one of the gimmicks they do is that they will have a stainless steel handle on a cooking pot or a frying pan, but the actual pan is made of aluminum. One way you can tell is look on the box. Is it 100% stainless steel? If it's not, don't buy it, because every time you cook in it, you're going to be releasing aluminum into the food. And if you use something acidic, let's say like tomatoes, then you get a lot more leaching of the aluminum. And aluminum is a major toxicant in the body, especially at the amount you're getting in, and it accumulates in the brain, and that can kill brain cells. Now, you also, there's a way of knowing stainless steel is very heavy. You pick up aluminum, it's light. You pick up a stainless steel, it's very heavy. But it also should show what it is. Glass is also fine. You know, you can use ceramic. You can use iron. Most people don't, but they could. And but don't use aluminum pots, pans, aluminum cans. Just don't use it. And that's going to protect you, and that's going to help you. And then there's a lot of reasons I don't swim in a public pool, mainly because of the enormous quantity of bacteria that's in the water from people's bodies. You don't know if someone has hepatitis, if they have herpes, if they have some form of skin bacteria. And you also don't know how many of them are clean hygienically. Wiping doesn't clean you, and the water disperses all that fecal contaminant into the water. Well, do you really want that into your swimming environment? I don't. So, you know, I don't swim in those pools. Some people say, well, isn't that fanatical? Well, you could say it's a great concern, but do you know how many of my friends I visited who have some form of waterborne pollution because they didn't think about the showers in Mexico when they were in the, you know, they didn't realize the same water that they tell you don't drink out of the tap. So they use bottled water to brush their teeth, and they get in the shower, the same identical water hits their head, goes in their mouth, and they're drinking more of it. And then they end up for 10 days with diarrhea and turning 17 colors of green and red. And then they finally get it. But some people, they have to be forced to get it. So then what do we do beyond avoidance? Which you can go a long way on avoidance. For example, rip up the carpets. Much better to have clean floors. You can have slate. You can have a tile, which is really nice. You can have hardwood. But carpet is a magnet for dust mites and danders and a breeding ground for bacteria. And if you have dogs and cats, well, then you got a really bad problem. So let's make it simple. Let's say that we want to protect ourselves from environmental cancer, and we can only do one thing. What would that one thing be? How about cruciferous vegetables? Why? Because cruciferous vegetables are the number one way of protecting your body's detoxification system, which in turn neutralizes the chemicals that you're having in your body, which then interferes with your DNA. Now, this is based upon an enormous amount of scientific research from peer-reviewed journals. The overall finding is that when you use cruciferous vegetables, you can reduce your cancer risk by 54%. That's incredible. In fact, you can reduce risk of virtually every major type of cancer. And that's what we haven't been done, but I'm hopeful as of today you will. And I'm taking more time than normal. This is one of our classroom on the air moments. Here's how it works. So let's go through this. Cruciferous vegetables, and there are a bunch of them, and let me just tell you which ones they are. First, the obvious ones, broccoli. That's a superstar. And Brussels sprouts. The cabbage family. That would be bok choy cabbage, red cabbage, white cabbage, cauliflower, collard greens. I grew up in the South. Collard greens are just virtually common there. Horseradish. By the way, horseradish is one of the best things in the world to use to kill bacteria and viruses in your throat. But beyond that, you have the kale. And a lot of people are hip on kale today. No one was using kale for a long time because, well, they didn't know how to cook it. And when you overcook kale or you steam kale, it frequently turns out tasting like a wet rag. I mean, it's just, it's not exciting. If you cook it with toasted sesame oil, and you quick cook it like wok cooking it, and you add garlic and onion and some sweet pepper, then you bring out a different taste and a mouthfeel. But today, most of the kale eaten is probably eaten when people dry it, dried kale. And there's a gazillion varieties of it. And when I first saw it 3 years ago, I said to the woman who invented it, I was in her kitchen, a little tiny kitchen, very small, out in Arizona, no bigger than an average person kitchen. I said, you've got a hit here. I said, but just be aware, if you don't do a national marketing campaign, then what's going to happen is you're going to have at least 100 competitors. They're going to be the Me Toos. Now, if they have the Where to All to Do Better Marketing or better labels, because I didn't think that they had done anything. It was one of these homegrown labels. It wasn't very exciting or colorful. I said, then you who invented it will be the last person benefiting from it. And indeed, that's what's happened. So remember, making something original is good, but making sure everyone identifies it as the one, that's where you really benefit. So anyhow, kale today is exciting. It's a cruciferous. It's extremely nutritious. But so are radishes. Now, you go to the farmer's market now and you'll find at least 100 different radishes available. They're all good. They all are powerful and they all help heal. So radishes are terrific. Parsnips are great. Now, another thing we find in the South you almost never eat in the North is called kohlrabi. K-O-H-L-R-A-B-I. Kohlrabi is delicious, but it's delicious because you first steam it, then you peel off the outer skin, then you can slice it, and I can use it after it's been blanched in a salad. I can mash it up and add different spices and do it almost like a mashed kohlrabi as a side dish. So there's a lot of things you can do with kohlrabi. Then watercress. Watercress you got to really wash, because you got to be careful here. And let me give you a little caveat, because there's a lot of parasites that are able to attach themselves to the root of watercress when it's growing wild. And that's why I always cut the roots off and I triple wash everything. Now, how do I triple wash it? Here's how you really wash your vegetables and fruits. And salads, even the salads that say triple washed, I don't care, I don't believe them. And so I wash it anyhow. I do a spray on of a particular veggie wash. Then I gently massage the leaves top and bottom, and then I rinse. Then I put it into a stainless steel bowl, and I fill it up with water. And as I'm filling it up with water, I agitate it with my hand. And that agitation allows any unseen surface grime, bacteria, any insect to come off in the water, and I rinse it. I do that 3 times, then spin it down, and you got a perfect salad. Not only do you have a perfect salad, but if you do enough, you can then put it into bags, and there are bags that breathe that protect your vegetables, and you push out the air, or you can put paper towels in if you want. And you push out all the air. The key is get the air out, zip it, so it's almost flat, and that'll last at least a week fresh. So you make your salad once, a big one, and you have it all week. All you have to do is just open the bag, put it in your bowl, and you have your salad, so you're not starting from scratch. So you have mustard. Mustard is big. In fact, mustard is just one of the most perfect things you can take in. Bok choy. And that gives you your wasabi. Wasabi, W-A-S-A-B-I, is very powerful, but it's also a powerful healer, a powerful killer of microorganisms. Those are your phenomenal vegetables that you need. Now, let's look at it a little more in depth. Cruciferous vegetables are known to fight cancer. They're the best in nature. Of all the things we eat, they're the ones that protect you against cancer. Breast cancer, prostate, colon, lung, bladder, ovarian, kidney. How's it work? They provide long-term anti-cancer protection. Even after they've been cleared from the body, Now, there's no other food group, not seaweed, not grains, not beans, not pulses, not herbs, that can do that. So the cruciferous vegetables are the ultimate superstars of the anti-cancer benefits in your body. Now, here's how it works. And I'll go through this. It's relatively simple. Scientists have found that cruciferous vegetables contain chemicals that control the cancer's on-off switch. What this means in lay language is cruciferous vegetables help fight against cancer either by activating genes that prevent cancer or by suppressing genes that cause cancer. Now, let's revisit the environmental pollution that we're all impacted by. Pollutants are in the air, water, soil, and a large number in industrial products, especially, as I told you, in plastics, and especially plastics that heat up. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Our bodies are equipped with enzyme systems to fight off toxic threats. But if your enzyme systems are not up to par, maybe you've been stressed, maybe you haven't been eating a good diet, maybe you've had sugar or high fructose or soft drinks or coffee or alcohol, even in moderate amounts, that can end up causing something bad to happen that can activate these toxins, causing them to become even more carcinogenic. And then on top of that, toxins suppress protective enzymes, impairing their ability to protect us from cancer. And that is where the superstars of cruciferous compounds come in. Cruciferous vegetables help support the key enzyme systems that detoxify your body from cancer-causing environmental toxins. As a result of that, you have a higher probability of not having cancer. Now, let's be very specific for the scientists or the physicians or nurses in this audience who listen in part because they know that I only talk about scientifically qualified material, always citing the literature every single day. There are chemicals. They're called glucosinolates. Now, the glucosinolates are found in broccoli and broccoli sprouts. They are converted within your body to a number of active constituents that fight cancer through multi-targeted mechanisms. For example, glucosinolates reduce the carcinogenicity of environmental toxins by boosting genetic expression of important detoxifying enzymes. They protect DNA from oxidative damage caused by toxins, up to 28% reduction in human research, thereby preventing the initial changes that can lead to cancer. And the glucosinolate derivatives encourage cancer cells to commit suicide, and they suppress genes that create the new blood vessels that support rapid growth of tumors. And finally, there's lots of evidence that glucosinolates can turn off genes that promote the spread of cancer. And because glucosinolates directly affect the function and expression of genes, what is called the epigenetic effect that I've been talking about a great deal lately, experts point out that their protective effects are both wide-ranging and long-lasting. The human research reveals that higher dietary intake of the glucosinolates are associated with a reduction in prostate cancer by 32%. Now, last week, I counseled a man who has prostate cancer, and he is now in the process of changing his lifestyle and realizing that it's not that difficult. So if he were to start consuming cruciferous vegetables and their juices or on a daily basis, the more he does, the greater his opportunity to reduce his cancer. Now, derivatives of the glucosinolates abundant in broccoli sprouts help prevent stomach cancer by killing the H. pylori bacterium. They also reduce symptoms of biomarkers of inflammation in infected individuals. In fact, here's something important. You don't want to cook your cruciferous vegetables because it reduces the rate of the glucosinolates convergence to the active molecules by 300%, which is one reason that when you're taking your compounding powders, which are raw, you're really ahead of that curve. But that's not just the only thing in these cruciferous vegetables that help you. They're also called indole, I-N-D-O-L-E, 3-carbinol, carb, C-O-B, I-N-O-L, or what is called I-3-C. It is one of the most heavily studied compounds of cruciferous vegetables. Lots of studies in the peer-reviewed literature showing that it helps fight cancer, the breast, prostate, and reproductive tract, as well as the colon and blood cancers, including leukemia. Now, in cancers of the reproductive tract, indole-3-carbinol helps prevent the development of tumors by benefiting important ratios of estrogen metabolites, such as the 2-hydroxyestrone, which is good, versus the 16-hydroxyestrone, which is bad. So the more 2 you have, which you get your from your cruciferous, and you get your 16 from meat and animal products, that's why the heavy meat eaters have more cancer, and the good quality vegan diets have fewer. It's those 2-hydroxyestrone-estriol ratios. Keep in mind, the 2-hydroxy, H-Y-D-R-O-X-Y, estrone, E-S-T-R-O-N-E, is an estrogen metabolite that seems to protect against cancer, whereas 16-hydroxyestrone can promote cancer. So that's why, used in lay language, your healthy, organic, vegan diet is so much more beneficial than a diet that is rich in animal proteins. So stress, that's bad, that promotes estrogen imbalances. In fact, the latest study even shows watercress has a very strong anti-cancer property, and just by itself. In fact, watercress is especially rich in another glucosinolate derivative, and it is called PEITC. PE, that's phenyl ethyl isothiocyanate. Long word, but just write down PEITC. And what does it do? It is inhibiting carcinogenic activation enzymes, it induces cancer detoxification enzymes, and it protects against DNA damage. It also is a remarkable specific epigenetic modulator that turns on genes that suppress cancer. So watercress, a superstar. Broccoli sprouts, cabbage, all of them rich in the glucosinolates, and that's important. And of all the literature out there, it can make an enormous difference. Colorectal cancer, 49% reduction. Melanoma, skin cancer, 46% reduction. Prostate cancer, 42%. Pancreatic cancer, 34%. Kidney cancer, 32%. Esophageal cancer, 28%. Ovarian cancer, 24%. Lung cancer, 22%. Breast cancer, 17%. So these are actually based upon good quality science. So I wanted to share all that all with you. And finally, don't forget that there are some other things out there that can help also with cancer. One of them is called apigenin, A-P-I, genin, G-E-N-I-N. It's a bioflavonoid. You find it in celery, parsley, and it's a known chemo-preventative plant. It helps stop the cell reproduction cycle, including cancer cell death by apoptosis, preventing metastasis and slowing new blood vessel formation. About 20 milligrams of apigenin in combination with probably about 200 milligrams of green tea, EGCG, drastically reduces the rate of colon rectal cancer. There's also cat's claw. Yeah, cat's claw in Icaria, Tomentosia. Very powerful. Protects you from tumors of the breast, cervical area, lung, thyroid, and colon, and with leukemia. And then rosemary. How about that? Simple, delicious rosemary. It is in helping with colon, skin, and ovarian cancers. It is capable of enhancing the ability of the body to rid itself of potential carcinogens. And it helps protect your DNA. So you see, yes, we live in a sea of carcinogens, and if we're cavalier, if we don't care, then we're going to end up hurting ourselves. But if we take the time to do the right thing and get your cruciferous nutrients in, you're helping yourself. Finally, I told you I would give you some tips on how 10 natural occurring nutrients would help prevent type 1 diabetes. And this is from Sayre G. And these are the things that can make a difference based upon actual clinical studies. Arginine, the amino acid, that can stimulate the genesis of beta cells in an animal model of alloxan-induced diabetes. Avocado, yes, a study found that avocado seed extract reduced blood sugar in diabetic rats. Researchers observed a restorative and protective effect on pancreatic islet cells in the treated group. Berry, B-E-R-I-N-E. A 2009 study found that this plant compound, commonly found in herbs such as barberry and golden seal, induces beta cell rejuvenation, and which lends explanation for why it's been used for 1,400 years in China to treat diabetes. Chard, regular old chard, Swiss chard. A study found that chard extract given to diabetic rats stimulates the recovery of injured beta cells. Corn silk, a 2009 study found that corn silk reduced blood sugar and stimulates beta cell rejuvenation in type 1 diabetic rats. Curcumin from turmeric, 2010 study found that curcumin stimulates beta cell rejuvenation in type 1 diabetic rats. And another study in 2008 found that curcumin preserves pancreatic islet cell survival and transplantation efficiency. Genistein from soy and red clover, 2010 study found that genistein induces pancreatic beta cells proliferation through activation of multiple signaling pathways and prevents insulin deficient diabetes in mice. Honey, that's right, good old raw honey created a positive effect on the metabolic derangements of type 1 diabetes, including beta cell regeneration. Also, and it would increase the fasting C-peptide levels. And Nigella sativa, which is black seed. A 2003 study found that black seed consumption leads to partial regeneration proliferation of beta cells. And a 2010 human study also found that the consumption of 1 gram of black seed a day for up to 12 weeks had a broad range of beneficial effects in diabetics, including increasing beta cell function. And finally, stevia. Stevia, S-T-E-V-I-A, the sweetener, has anti-diabetic properties, including revitalization of damaged beta cells, and compares favorably with a drug, but without any of the adverse effects. So there you got it, some ways of helping yourself. One last thing. I mentioned the new emphasis on black vegetables. Well, we know that whole organic fruits and vegetables should be a staple of everyone's diet. And we know we receive our antioxidants from the brightly colored organic food. But most people don't know that black or dark foods are even more powerful in their antioxidants. One particular antioxidant from the dark side is the superstar anthocyanidins. Now, antho, A-N-T-H-O, cyanidins, C-Y-A-N-I-N-S, are powerful phytonutrients. That's a type of flavonoid consisting of water-soluble pigments that serve numerous functions in plants. And the most concentrated natural sources of anthocyanidins are purple, blue, red, and black whole foods, including spices and seeds. So those are things we don't generally think about. And there's good research on this, including, quote, black foods have more antioxidants than light-colored foods because of their high pigment content, end quote, Dr. Cy Lee, professor of food chemistry, Cornell University. So let me just give you real quickly here three. Black pepper. Peppercorns are the fruit of the vine from the Piper nigrum plant. Incredibly, black pepper increases nutrient absorption from other foods by 2,000%. Let me repeat that. I've told you for years I use a lot of black pepper. Well, black pepper increases the nutrient absorption of other foods by 2,000%. In fact, WebMD reports that black pepper has numerous health benefits, including antibacterial properties and enhancing digestion. And it's also been used extensively in natural medicine to restore digestive aids. And it's been used in Ayurvedic medicine for 5,000 years. And black pepper stimulates digestive enzyme and significantly reduces gastrointestinal food transit time. And hence, black pepper helps remove gas and bloating after a meal. And then black tea is derived from the evergreen tree Camellia, and it's teeming with antioxidant polyphenols. And black tea's polyphenols have been shown to help brain injury, hearing loss, and it looks promising for treating Parkinson's. It can reduce the risk of cardiovascular problems with black tea. In fact, a Boston University study revealed that black tea reverses a coronary artery disease called endothelium vasomotor dysfunction. So those are just a few of the things. And finally, black lentils. Now, you've heard of red lentils and you've heard of yellow lentils. Well, how about black lentils? And so use that. And by the way, the European Journal of Clinical Nutrition did a review in the literature and found, quote, a daily cup of black tea can reduce the risk of heart disease. Now, then a meta-analysis, which means many studies, found black tea helps bone density, protects your teeth from cavities. Oh, that's good. But the black lentil, it looks like caviar after cooking, and hence the name beluga lentils. Now, nutrition like beluga caviar. Tiny black lentils are low in fat and high in fiber, iron, and protein. Excellent source of energy in stabilizing your blood sugar. They contain 24% more easy-to-digest plant proteins than any other lentil variety. So one cup of black lentils contains about 50% of the daily requirement of iron, allowance for women. It's good in B-complex, phosphorus, manganese, magnesium. And it also contains tannins and phytochemicals that prevent cancer growth. It can reduce inflammation. So that's the latest on what to do to make a difference in your life. I'm Gary Nall. Talk back now. We're going to take a break and come back. The rest of the show is your turn. Our number, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And if you're listening over the telephone line, which a gazillion people are now, millions and millions and millions of minutes, we're number one and number two in the world. There's one guy in South Africa that has a radio show that people don't listen to over the radio because they don't have it. They listen over their cell phone. But here in South America, North America, and Canada, this is the number one listened to radio program over the telephone in all of the Americas. So thank you for listening in. That number to listen to anywhere at any time, 619-550-0869. 619-550-0869. 0869. Back in a moment with your calls. Welcome, everyone. We have people listening all over the world right now in over 160 countries, and I thank you for listening in. Let me just mention also that I'm posting a major article this week. It's taken me about a year to write and research. I had to be extremely diligent on it because the working title of the article that may be different by Tuesday when I post it is Who Controls the World? I had to examine all the different major institutions, their interlocking boards, the politicians, the bankers, the industrialists, the people who are the contractors, the policymakers, and see how did we get to this mess that we're in where so many people are suffering and so few people have so much. And it's not the characters you think. It's not even the companies you think. And I had to vet this through different scholars, through economists, through people who have the capacity to determine if the information is accurate. And instead of just bring it out there and having any flaws in it, I want it to be as good as it can be because I think it will cause us to have a mind shift. I intend to share this with you starting this week. It may be in a series because it's a long article. Separately, because this audience is not an audience like the Huffington Post or any of the other publications or Democracy Now!, we are progressive in the true sense, meaning we're not aligned with the left or right. We're simply aligned with the truth and what works and what is in the best interest of all people and the planet. Therefore, when you don't have a body politic you're working through and you don't have an ideology you're defending, where you're just looking for the truth, you have so much in common with so many people. And those are the articles we print each day. We probably post upwards of 75 different articles a day, and I do it in the day, in the morning, afternoon, and overnight. We hire people who do nothing but this. So that's why, for example, tonight, there'll probably be upwards of 40,000 download reads of those articles, and that's a lot. And that's just not even a fast night. Sometimes it goes as high as 50,000 a night. Plus, we want to thank the 7,000 brand new listeners who tuned on yesterday, for example. So we appreciate all that. Let's now say hello to Peter from Hallandale, Florida. Hi, Peter. You're on the line.
Hello, Gary. I want to thank you for all the important information that you and your guests have presented about the harm caused by vaccines. That said, I was wondering what your reaction was to an article that the New York Times published about a month and a half ago documenting a so-called dramatic decline in the human papillomavirus among teenagers. And, of course, the article credited the Gardasil vaccine for that decline. And I was wondering if you had read the article and had any other response to it and could ascribe other reasons for the supposed decline in the rate of the transmission of this disease.
First of all, the New York Times, in my opinion, on so many issues, especially health, has been completely and totally compromised. It is nothing more than a voice, a propaganda voice for the pharmaceutical industry, and has been for a long time. On some issues, they get it right. On an awful lot of issues, they don't. And the consequences of their being wrong can be serious. Let me explain. Do you remember the number one publication in the world that beat the drums for the war on Iraq, claiming with absolute certainty that an insider named Curveball, that Judith Miller, the reporter for the New York Times, who ran a series of articles, was coming out? That Curveball came out of Dick Cheney's office. That person had already been discredited by CIA. They knew he was a pathological liar. Therefore, he was a plant, and yet he was used. That's because Cheney's office and the neocons, Wolfowitz, and the others, they needed a war. They needed this mission. Now, it's been extremely profitable, all told over $1 trillion for the people who've been involved. So it cost us, not them. They profited. And yet to this day, the people responsible have not been held accountable. They should all, including Judith Miller, in my opinion, and the editors of the New York Times, they should have all resigned. And then they should have been held accountable for crimes against humanity. Look at the consequences. A country that's now ravaged by depleted uranium that will never leave. Massive birth defects. The highest birth defects in the world are in Iraq and now Afghanistan. The country will be toxic for the next 4 billion years with a B. The expert on depleted uranium precedes me on the program here, Doug Rocky. And Doug was the Pentagon's front person who was sent to Iraq with a team to determine, is depleted uranium dangerous? Is it widespread? He came back. His reports, which were methodical, showed, yes, it's dangerous. Depleted doesn't mean non-toxic. It's extremely toxic, and it doesn't go away. Instead of dealing with it, and the fact that our vets were coming back with Gulf War syndrome in no small measure due to their impact of depleted uranium, among other things, they simply covered it up and have continued to cover it up to this day. So this is the same newspaper, mind you. This is also the same newspaper that refused to hold Barack Obama accountable for the destruction of our Constitution and our Bill of Rights, the First, the Fourth, and the Fifth Amendments, which have been eviscerated. And that's unfortunate. And also the wrong information that they used in inspiring the support for NATO going into Libya. We, on this program, did about 6 programs in depth with scholars showing that if we went into Libya, it was not because of Gaddafi. Gaddafi was no threat to us. In fact, it would have shattered the alliances of almost 2,000 tribes in Libya. And that's exactly what happens. Today, you have nothing but sectarian violence in Libya. There is no point of center there. It's the exploitation of the water, with one of the largest water projects in the history of Africa, and its oil. And now we're doing the same thing in Syria. We've been funding the Syrian opposition, including Al-Qaeda, because it is a part of the final movement of the countries that were chosen back in the 1990s to eliminate, to maintain economic and resource stability and geopolitical stability and exploitation from the Israeli and the American perspective. And all you have to do is take the time and do the scholarship and you'll see it. So if on the one hand you're asking me, do I believe anything the New York Times says without challenge, the answer is no. Let me give you another example. When Paul Offit proclaims with his new book, everywhere that you can imagine, that taking a vitamin without a prescription is dangerous, they're unproven. Well, I have 500,000 studies from the peer-reviewed literature on the safety, efficacy, and chemistry of vitamins and minerals alone. There's another 100,000 studies on herbs. The largest single herb repository of quality research, University of Illinois, under Dr. Farnsworth. Meticulous research on herbs, on their safety, efficacy, and chemistry. The leading expert on herbs in the government was Dr. James Duke. At the USDA for decades. I met Dr. Duke the year that he retired. I filmed him. I still haven't released that film yet, to show what herbs does. And as we were going around his garden, and it's a wonderful, beautiful garden that he has down near Washington, D.C., he was showing us, here is this herb, and here how many studies are on this herb, and what it does in the body. He's not talking as a lay herbalist. He's talking as a man with an academic background and 40 years of research on the use of herbs and their benefits in laboratory studies that he has published, over 200 articles in peer-reviewed literature, maybe more at this point. Then we have a man who has no background, none, in science of nutrition, herbalism, and nutritional biochemistry. He has never treated a person for nutrition, and yet he becomes the new Quackbuster. He becomes the new authority that everyone suddenly starts quoting as if he is authentic. In the process, we have thousands upon thousands of studies showing the benefits of nutrients. I just cited some. I cited the sources, even today on this program. And yet my citing every single day of the week, peer-reviewed literature, quality studies on what a nutrient will do, none of that is considered by this man. Instead, he will select one poorly designed study. And even in a debate where he produced a study saying, oh, well, this study showed that, for example, that St. John's wort doesn't help people with depression. Ah, but there were 27 studies that showed that it did. So why didn't he talk about the 27 positive studies? And the final kicker is that if the New York Times, the paper of record, wanted to do real research and be objective, then you would ask a simple question. Are vitamins safe as compared to drugs, as compared to prescription drugs that he's suggesting, and as compared to drugs that have gone through the FDA's approval process at about $100 million per drug? Here's the results. In 27 years, the National Center for Disease Control, Poison Control has not found a single death. In the same period of time, in the last 5 years, there has been over 3.2 million deaths. You have at least, and that's only deaths reported, in hospital, not at home. But most people don't die in hospital. Most people die at home. The FDA commissioner, Dr. David Kessler, told me in an interview, and he was former commissioner of the FDA, that anywhere from 2 to 10% maximum of adverse effects are ever reported. That means the number of people dying from prescription drugs could be 10 million people over that period of time, or let's say the last 20 years. Now, that's staggering. So you have zero deaths versus millions of deaths. You have no major hospitalizations to speak of, and yet you have millions of hospitalizations on the other side. So not just death, it's also injury. So how can a person defend the merits of something when all the major science, including 78% of all physicians are using vitamin supplements, 81% of all nurses are using dietary supplements, 68% of all doctors are recommending to their patients use dietary supplements. The largest peer-reviewed literature study, the nurses study, the physician study, with over 60,000 physicians and nurses, and at Harvard, run through Harvard, has shown that those who simply took a multiple vitamin, the very thing he would advocate you not take, unless it was from your physician, and had a double-blind study, those people were shown to have a statistically significant reduction in heart disease and cancer and diabetes. Then, the idea that the American diet is healthy, it is not. We're 27th in the developed nations of the world in health and infant mortality and a lot of other negative factors. But mind you, instead of looking at this man as being nothing more than a very articulate spokesman for the drug industry, and wasn't his company sold for $167 million? And didn't he create the vaccines? And isn't he a proponent of the vaccines? And isn't this the same Paul Offit who said, in pediatrics, in the peer-reviewed literature, that you could give your kid 10,000 vaccines at one time, 10,000, and then a few years later, upped it to 100,000 vaccines at a time. Now, that statement on the record, never refuted by the New York Times, that alone should have disqualified him from ever being invited anywhere to talk about anything. Could you imagine what would happen to a baby's body if you gave the baby 10,000 vaccines at one time, let alone 100,000? Now, I give you this as context because this is the kind of nonsense, this is the kind of demonization of the movement of those of us who advocate taking responsibility for the prevention of disease, which they don't want us to do. They only want our doctor to tell us what to do. But the FDA had to recall 50% of all the drugs that it approved during a 10-year period because they were so dangerous and had to be either relabeled or taken and banned altogether. So the idea that a approved FDA drug given by prescription by your doctor is safe is nonsense. There is no such thing as a safe drug. They all have effects and side effects. And then to advocate that only vitamins that are treated like drugs. But we worked for years to create a law in the United States that was passed in the 1990s that gave us the right to use our supplements as foods. He wants to take that away. Well, they're not going to get that taken away. So on the other hand, then, if I can't trust the New York Times on anything it ever says about health or nutrition or Obama, this administration, And this was also the same New York Times that withheld information about secret wiretapping under the FISA bill. It held it till after the election, till Bush was reelected. Then it released it. Then they are complicit, in my opinion, of violating ethics and morality at the highest level. So outside, if you're ever out in the woods and you run out of toilet paper, then you use the editorial page in the New York Times. And I wouldn't use it for anything else. Now, separately, the evidence, the real evidence on the Gardasil vaccine disproves that it is effective against the human papillomavirus. It has never been shown to prevent cervical cancer. The pap smear does prevent it. Gardasil, we won't know if it even could prevent it for 25 to 35 years. I interviewed Diane Harper, one of the developers of the Gardasil vaccine, just 3 weeks ago. And on the record, she's very disappointed by how they have taken what they did in their laboratory and extrapolated for marketing purposes. The newest information shows that the adverse effects from Gardasil are escalating to the highest level of any vaccine in the world today. There's over 130 deaths from Gardasil. There's over 25,000 adverse effects. Now, mind you, that's what's been reported. There is also all forms of paralysis that's happened, neurological damage that's happened from this vaccine. And yet, this is being worked on behind the scenes to get it mandated. And so anything the New York Times says on Gardasil or vaccines in general, or specifically, I would not trust, I would not believe. Now, I'm just finishing a major documentary on vaccines, and Gardasil is high up on the list. And everything that I can tell you about it, it's not safe and it's not effective. And if anyone who works for the manufacturer or any of its scientists want to come on and debate me, I'm inviting you to come on and debate me on the safety and efficacy of Gardasil. And if any state legislator who has taken the hand of ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, or have taken donations from any manufacturer of any vaccine wishes to come on this show and explain how, in good conscience, they can mandate a vaccine that is dangerous, that is killing people, that is not effective, can be used, I'd like to hear that. And how in the world would they know if they've reduced sexually transmitted human papillomavirus from a vaccine because they haven't gone in and interviewed the 16 to 30 million teens? They take a small sampling of individuals, and that's all they do. And then they extrapolate it, not independent scientists. And we already know that 90% of all industry-funded studies, if they're negative, you never see the light of day. If they're positive, you only hear their interpretation because they hire ghostwriters, they hire the scientists who cannot tell the truth about what they've researched because of confidentiality contracts that could cause them to be sued, and then they interpret this. And when you see how they interpret any research, it's always to their betterment. Now, independent research does not show the same thing. Hope that answers your question. All the best to you, Peter and Hallandale. I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. I appreciate the time you spent with us.